There is a fifth dimension, beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition. It lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Dimensions, a Twilight Zone podcast. On tonight's episode, we will be discussing Season 2, Episode 22, titled Long Distance Call. This episode was written by Charles Beaumont and William Idelson, directed by James Sheldon, produced by Buck Houghton, with music by Marius Constant, Rene Gerowink, Bernard Herrmann, Lucian Morawack, Leonard Rosenman, and Nathan Scott. In the cast were Philip Abbott, Lily Darvis, Patricia Smith, and Bill Mummy. Its original air date was March 31st of 1961. And as always, you can find this on Tubi TV, Freevee TV, Paramount Plus, or of course the DVD or Blu-ray sets. And of course, like I always say, if you have a little bit of extra money and you want physical media, the Blu-ray set is the way to go. Simply for the crispness and clearness of picture and sound, and for the extra features. As always, be prepared, because there are spoilers ahead, so if you haven't seen this episode since Reagan introduced trickle-down economics, or the last episode of Dynasty aired, give a pause to this podcast and go give that episode a watch, and then come back and listen to this episode of the podcast. So, without further delay, let's get into the opening narration. As must be obvious, this is a house hovered over by Mr. Death, an omnipresent player to the third and final act of every life. And it's been said, and probably rightfully so, that what follows this life is one of the unfathomable mysteries, an area of darkness which we, the living, reserve for the dead, or so it is said. For in a moment, a child will try to cross that bridge which separates light and shadow, and of course, he must take the only known route, that indistinct highway through the region we call the Twilight Zone. So, little Billy is having a birthday, his fifth birthday, to be exact, and his grandmother is coming to visit, staying at the house. It's not really made clear necessarily whether she lives there or if she's just visiting. Regardless, she comes to the party, and she is not well, very much not well, to the point that she could pretty much pass any day, and as we see soon here in a few minutes, she actually does. But before she passes away, they have the birthday party for the boy. At the birthday party, she gives him his present, which is a toy telephone. And he's excited, and he loves his grandmother. And his grandmother says, anytime you want to talk to me, you can talk to me on that telephone, whether I'm here or whether I'm not. And they have this little exchange where they both pick up each the telephone, the boy with the toy and the grandmother with the real one. And they have a small little chat. They cut the cake. They eat the cake. Grandmother's not feeling well. She goes to lay down. And she subsequently passes away. But now before she passes away, she has a moment of deathbed clarity, where she talks to her grandson and tells him that anytime he wants to talk to her, he can talk to her on the telephone, and that she wishes that he could come with her to stay with her. And when it comes to the boy's parents, The mother doesn't recognize the son and says her son was taken from her by a woman, meaning his wife. And the mother passes away. The grandmother, as it were, passes away. We then see the mother when they come back from the funeral. The boy is standing out in the backyard looking at their pond. The mother brings him in. He goes upstairs to play. She's talking with her husband, the boy's father, about, you know, what are they going to do now and that kind of thing, as you do. And she goes upstairs to change, and she hears Billy talking on the telephone with the grandmother. Now, this is where it starts to get Twilight Zone-ish. Because the boy, when the mother asks him who he's talking to, says, Grandma, I'm talking to Grandma. And, of course, we write that off as, you know, just the playness, you know, the playtime for a child. He wants to talk to his grandmother, who's no longer alive, so he picks up the telephone that she told him he could talk to her on at any time, and he starts talking to her. Well, this escalates in the second act. The parents come home, and we find out that the neighbor is at the house with the babysitter, and the neighbor is somewhat upset because he almost hit Billy with his car because Billy ran out into the road. Now, that's not necessarily uncommon for children to run out into the road, especially way back before cell phones were invented. Children played in the street a lot, maybe not at the age of 5, but certainly preteen, you know, and even teenager to, you know, to some extent. Playing in the street was actually part of the fun of growing up as a child. You'd play everything from baseball to ride bicycles to skateboard to whatever you would do in the middle of the street, especially if you lived in a neighborhood or in a subdivision or in a small suburb of a big city. You played in the street. That's what you did. Because especially if you lived in the suburb of a big city, especially of a place like Chicago or New York, you didn't have much of a yard really to play in. So the street was more or less your yard. But let's remember that Billy is only 5 years old. So for him to play in the street, yeah, you don't do that. So, of course, the father says, well, my boy doesn't play in the street. And the neighbor's like, well, he did today. I don't know what to tell you. And, of course, the babysitter is just beside herself because she almost lost a customer. And obviously, you know, of course, don't want the kid to die and all that. But, you know, she's beside herself because she's sitting there thinking the entire time she's going to get fired, not get paid. And, of course, the neighbor's beside himself because he almost hit a 5-year-old child with his car. And the father seems to, you know, blame everyone, of course, but the child. Which, I guess if you're a parent, not being a parent myself, I couldn't tell you, but I would understand you'd kind of, in a situation like that, especially being 5 years old, you might, you know, think it's everyone else's responsibility, but the child's, you kind of look after themselves, because then again, they're 5 years old. So it's not like they're 10 years old or 12 years old and, you know, have somewhat of our ability to rationally think. This kid is 5. He runs out in the street. It's an accident. Except in this case, the neighbor goes on to explain to the father that he might want to have the boy looked at because the neighbor, after almost hitting him and stopping his car, took the boy aside and said, you know, why'd you run out in the street? And the little boy told him that someone told him to do it. So, of course, this kind of enrages the father a little more. The neighbor just leaves. And, of course, we never see the babysitter again because she probably got fired. R.I.P. babysitter. So, of course, the mother and the father are quite upset, quite taken aback, quite concerned about what's going on, because the babysitter even said, before we never see her again, that she didn't even know the kid was in the street because he was in his room all day talking on the telephone to someone. So, this now causes more concern for the mother. The father just kind of seems like he's not buying it, of course, because you always have to have that one character in every movie or every TV show that, you know, everyone else is seeing what's going on. One person doesn't see what's happening. In this situation, it's the father. So he goes upstairs, and the wife goes upstairs as well. She goes to see the kid. The kid acts like he's asleep. A little while later, they hear the kid talking on the phone again. They go into the room, and, you know, the mother's like, "Who are you talking to?" And the kid's like, "Nobody," and, you know, that sort of thing. Then at 3 a.m., we get up again, hear the kid talking on the telephone, again with the same questions of, "Who are you talking to? Why are you on the phone? Who are you talking to?" The kid says, "Grandma." And the mother takes the phone out of his hand, and she looks very frightened and very concerned. The kid runs out of the room screaming and crying. The father comes in and says, what's going on? And the wife says that she heard the grandmother on the other end of the line breathing on the toy telephone. The father runs downstairs to go after the child, and the child has jumped into the pond and tried to drown himself. The father pulls the boy out, which brings us into the last final part of the episode, where paramedics and firemen, which are at this point basically the same thing, are working on the boy to try to save his life. They've called the doctor. The doctor's on his way. And one of the firemen, of course, is Robert McCord, the man who has been in more Twilight Zone episodes than any other actor combined. But they're working on the boy to save him. The mother is, of course, distraught and beside herself. And the father does the only thing he can think to do. He goes upstairs, gets on the toy telephone, and tells his mother that, you know, the boy still has so much living to do because he's only 5. And if she would just leave him alone and let him stay on Earth, he would really appreciate it. And he comes back downstairs, and they've saved the boy's life, and the episode ends. And with that, we will get the closing narration. A toy telephone, an act of faith, a set of improbable circumstances, all combined to probe a mystery, to fathom a depth, to send a facet of light into a dark after region, to be believed or disbelieved, depending on your frame of reference, a fact or fantasy, a substance or a shadow, but all of it very much a part of the Twilight Zone. So, this episode is the last of the videotaped episodes of the Twilight Zone. So it's the last one that's going to look different than any of the others. It's the last of 6 that were put on videotape instead of film. So we don't have any of those left to worry about. Now, what this episode also is it's the last not awesome episode before the rest of the season, which is full of some heavy hitters. We're about to get into the thick of it starting next week, and it's going to get really good. But we had to get through this episode to get there. Now, this episode is my least favorite of all the videotaped episodes. Even the used car salesman one I like better than this one. Nothing against Bill Mumy. I like him. He's fantastic in the other, episode of the Twilight Zone. And I didn't care for the parents. And I didn't care for the babysitter. The only person to me that was the better actor of all of them was the neighbor. And that just shouldn't be. I don't know. This episode was not a great episode, in my opinion. As a matter of fact, I would put it in the bottom third or even bottom quarter of the episodes. It's lower tier for me. I just didn't care for it. I like the idea. I like the idea of the story. And perhaps if it was one of those episodes where it was an hour long instead of a half hour long, if we could flesh out the idea more or even have the kid attempt in another way to unalive himself, then perhaps it might have been a better episode. But as it stands right now, it's not a great episode, which is sad because it had potential to be really great. Now, I know what you're going to say. Well, some people, this is their favorite episode, and it may well be. And I'm not saying they're wrong, and I'm not saying I'm right. Art, much like anything else, as I've always said, is subjective. And everyone is certainly entitled to their own opinions and their own thoughts and their own likes and dislikes. I personally dislike this episode. I never really cared for it. It's one of those episodes that I would get up and go make a sandwich if it was on a marathon. I would wait, for it to be done to, watch whatever the next episode would be. So, if you have differing opinion, if you love this episode or hate it much like I do, well, not hate, that's a strong word, isn't it? Let's not use that word. Dislike. If you dislike it like I do, write me an email, dimensionstzpodcast@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Your thoughts on this episode or previous episodes or future episodes, because like I said, we're about to get into it. We're about to get into the nitty and the gritty and the good and the bad and the ugly. Well, we've just seen the bad. Now we just have the good and the ugly to get through in the next few episodes before the end of season two. And I'm excited because these next number of episodes are fantabulous episodes, and I can't wait to get into them with you guys. But before we do that, why don't we get into some biographies? Now, this episode was directed by James Sheldon, who we've seen before on The Twilight Zone, because he directed six episodes total, two of the videotaped episodes, including The Whole Truth, the used car salesman one, this one, of course, and season two's A Penny for Your Thoughts, starring, of course, Darren from Bewitched, the original one. In the next season, he will direct Bill Mumy again in It's a Good Life. He will direct Still Valley, and he will direct the only Ray Bradbury contribution to The Twilight Zone, I Sing the Body Electric. So if you want to hear Mr. Sheldon's biography, go back and listen to The Whole Truth, and you will hear his biography on that episode. And it's a better episode to listen to and to watch, in my opinion, than this one. So do yourself a favor and go check that out. Now, this episode was written by Charles Beaumont and William Idelson. Now, William Idelson was born in 1919 and died in 2001 at the age of 88. And he is a television writer known for such things as Get Smart, Love American Style, The Andy Griffith Show, one episode of The Twilight Zone, but he also wrote for The Flintstones, and Bewitched, of course. Also, The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, Gomer Pyle, USMC, The Odd Couple, Happy Days, The Betty White Show, Punky Brewster, and lastly but not leastly, one episode of the Twilight Zone radio dramas that came out in the very early 2000s, which was, of course, based on this episode. So, that's pretty interesting. Now, let's go to the man who would be the dad of Bill Mumy. Mr. Philip Abbott was born in 19 and 24 and passed away at the age of 73 in 1998. Now, he was a writer, producer, director, and actor. So he did a little bit of everything. He produced just a few different things, some TV movies in the early 70s. Not really super anything to get worried about. However, he did write several things, including those same couple of TV movies that he produced in the early 70s. He also wrote several short, he actually also wrote several short, almost like, almost like Schoolhouse Rock things for Disney back in the mid-70s to late-70s, starring, of course, different characters like Dumbo and the 101 Dalmatians and Pinocchio and Lady and the Tramp and that sort of thing. And he also directed all of those things that he wrote and produced. But acting is where he made his bread and butter, starring in, or I should say playing in, his very first role was in an episode of Schlitz Playhouse. Since then, he was a character actor in several different things. Of course, you've heard them all. Ponds Theater, Philco Television Playhouse, Lux Video Theater, one episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, Matinee Theater, the United States Steel Hour, Goodyear Playhouse, True Story, Studio One, Kraft Theater, Shirley Temple's Storybook, Playhouse 90, Stop Me If You've Heard This, General Electric Theater, The Naked City, The Detectives, The Defenders. All told, he acted in 143 different projects, culminating in his last on-screen appearance in 1999 in a movie called Starry Night, where he played the character of Dr. Ruby. Now, Philip Abbott's wife in this episode, Sylvia, was played by Patricia Smith. Now, Patricia Smith was born in 1930 and passed away at the age of 80 in 2011. Now, interesting of note, Patricia Smith was diagnosed at an early age with type 1 diabetes, which her struggle through the upcoming 65 years of her life, her struggle with her type 1 diabetes led to the heart troubles that eventually took her life. And she was a versatile and prolific actress who appeared in basically any television show that you can name from the 60s and the 70s. After appearing in bit parts in television shows, she went on to leave the show business, the in front of the camera show business part of it behind, and found employment in the legal section of the composer's agency, Gorfain Schwartz. Now, for the would-be murdering grandmother, she was played by Lily Darvis. Now, Lily Darvis, if you couldn't tell from the accent that she used in the television program, She was a Hungarian-born woman, born in Budapest. She was born in 1902 and passed away at the age of 72 in 1974. So she would have only been about 59 years old in this episode, although she looks decidedly older. She got her start on stage in Germany with Max Reinhardt's theater company during the 20s, touring Europe with plays by Shakespeare, Tolstoy, and Shaw. She received her education at the Budapest Lyceum, and her very first stage play was as Juliet in Romeo and Juliet. In 1926, she married playwright Ferenc Molnár, who wrote several plays for her, including Olympia and Delilah. The following year, she made her Broadway debut as Titania in A Midsummer Night's Dream. Now, being of Jewish descent and from the German area, obviously she couldn't be sticking around in Europe during the mid to late 30s. So she used her Hungarian passport to escape to Switzerland and later found her way into America, of course. Most of her success and most of her acting came from being on the stage, mostly in New York, of course. She played the starring role in Waltz of the Toreadors in 1958. She starred as Sigmund Freud's domineering mother, Amelie, in The Far Country in 1961. And she was nominated for a Tony Award for Best Supporting or Featured Actress in Lorraine Hansberry's La Blanca. On screen, she appeared in the big-budget MGM musical Meet Me in Las Vegas in 1956. Following her husband's death, she turned less from the big screen and more into early television anthology, drama, and radio. Her most recognized or most loved small screen appearance was as Bill Mumy's grandmother in this episode of The Twilight Zone. And she passed away at the age of 72 in 1974. And for the boy who would be Billy, we will wait until It's a Good Life to talk about the life and adventures and misadventures of Mr. Bill Mumy. So that'll do it for the bios. Let's roll into the trivia section. Now, as I said before, this was the last of six episodes that was videotaped instead of filmed. The original script called for then 6-year-old Bill Mumy's character to be found floating face down in the pond behind the house. However, Bill's mother refused to allow her son to participate in a drowning scene, even though he was a good swimmer. Director James Sheldon modified the shot to show only the father reaching into the pond to pull Billy out, carefully filming to exclude having to show the boy in the water. So, per the mother's request, we never got to see Billy floating in the pool. This, of course, is the first of three appearances by Bill Mumy. The next one is It's a Good Life in 1961, and In Praise of Pip in 1963. And then, of course, he made an appearance in the 2003 basically sequel to It's a Good Life titled It's Still a Good Life. Interesting to note that this is the first episode that Rod Serling did not write nor produce. As such, he received only a credited by credit on the episode. According to the production slate included on the Blu-ray release, filmings for this episode starting on the 14th of December in 1960. And lastly, the end credits have a slightly longer version of the theme. So with that, let's move on to the likes and dislikes of this episode. Well, if it hasn't been clear, I kind of dislike this episode. I always kind of have. Even on repeated viewings, even watching it before doing this podcast, I still looked at it and I just couldn't get into it. I cannot like this episode. The acting's wrong. The script is okay, but it's everything just seems so wooden and just way different to me anyway than other episodes of The Twilight Zone. Even other episodes that were videotaped instead of filmed still seemed better than this one. And so if you had to rank the six that were videotaped instead of filmed, for me, and again, you may agree with me, you may disagree with me, that's the beauty of it, but this one would rank dead last in number six. Not saying that I didn't think that Bill Mumy did okay. I mean, he's 5 years old. What are you going to do? But I just didn't care for the parents. I didn't care for the babysitter. And like I said, to me, the best thing of the episode was the grandmother and the neighbor. And the grandmother isn't in long enough to even, you know, recognize her if she was in a police lineup. So all in all, just not a great episode in my opinion. But I did like the neighbor. I did like Bill Mumy, of course, and the grandmother all played their parts well. Bill Mumy also always just kind of was a creepy child to me, which really adds to the greatness of episodes that he's in, because it's that creepiness factor that sort of helps push it over the edge and really sell it. So I think he was great. So with that, let's get into the casting. So if Hollywood were to call me and say, Bill, we're going to remake this episode, who would you cast as leads in this episode? And I will tell you, for the mother and father, I would go with Adam Driver, and for the wife, I would go with Liliana Mumy, who is actually Bill Mumy's daughter. So I think that would be interesting. And for children, I couldn't tell you who to cast as the 5-year-old Billy. I have no children, and therefore no reason to watch any children's programming. So I couldn't really tell you. Even on most sitcoms I watch, the children are at least around 10 to 12 years old, some even older. So I couldn't even tell you who a good child actor is these days. So I'm just going to skip that. But with that being said, for the grandmother, I would go with Helen Mirren. Just because, by gosh, I love Helen Mirren. And I want to see her in everything. So Helen Mirren for the grandmother. And so if you like those casting ideas, great. Let me know. If you don't, let me know. Write me. Dimensions. tzpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. And lastly but not leastly, the moral or philosophy of the episode. And to me, you're talking about life and death. You're talking about unaliving, because you don't want to say the S word anymore. That's taboo. So you have to say unaliving people, or unaliving yourself. obviously, That's a bad thing. You want to avoid that, obviously, at all costs, if possible. But with that being said, with the moral or philosophy of this story, I can't really speak other than to dealing with the unaliving portion of it. It has nothing to do with being careful what you wish for or anything like that. Or maybe what we could boil it down to if we really wanted to was that words have weight. Words carry weight behind them. So when the grandmother tells little Billy she wants to be with him, and even through the magic of a toy telephone and a little bit of the Twilight Zone, talks to him and tells him to run out in traffic or drown himself in a pool. Words carry weight. Maybe that's what we'll go with. Words carry weight. So be mindful of what you say and who you say it to. Because you never know what kind of influence you could have on someone, whether you think you do or not. You definitely can. Now, by the time the next episode comes out, I should have my YouTube channel up and running with reviews and that of each episode. And I will be starting back at season 1, episode 1, the pilot, for The Twilight Zone, of course. Where is everybody? And I will be doing short YouTube videos about each episode as well. So stay tuned for that. I will have the information for you next week. And hopefully the 15 of you that listen will also subscribe to my YouTube channel. So stay tuned for that. And stay tuned for next week's episode when Cliff Robertson travels the Oregon Trail from the 1870s to the 1960s. So stay tuned for that. And thank you everyone for listening. I really do appreciate all of you. And I hope you have a good week. And definitely have a good night. Thank you, everybody.